Off top, Princeton researchers turned a live cat into a working telephone. Play the music.
This is the Dominique Foxworth Show.
All right, welcome to the Dominique Foxworth Show. That laughter you hear in the back is from the great Foxworth Show Hall of Famer, Wozni Lambre. He is pretending like he's from New York, even though he out in L.A. right now. He put on that New York hat to try to fool us. You are an L.A. man, Wozni.
I reject the notion. I do have a lot of love for my adopted home of Los Angeles. It's been close to 7 years now since I've been here in on the West Coast and drinking green juices and, you know, putting on natural deodorants and the things of that sort. But no, I will be a New York MF-er through and through until the day that I'm gone.
We're on ESPN2 now, so we got some new audience. So I guess we should introduce them to my good friend, producer and co-host, the great Charlie Kravitz. And he is a Segway god. We'll see if he can pull it off today.
Got a big show. Got obviously you're going to talk Nuggets Wolves with Wozni. And then we're going to bring in Kevin Clark, talk about some more headlines. But you brought up that cat becoming a telephone because Anthony Edwards also transformed a cat into a winning basketball player. And we need to start there because...
I didn't know how you were going to pull off that segue. But once I see it now, it was too obvious. It was so obvious.
You got to be kidding me.
No. Okay.
Oh, my Lord. No, please, somebody get this man.
Unacceptable. Got to be kidding me. That one's unacceptable. All right. What do you want to talk about,
Charlie? Well, we got to talk about the evisceration from the Minnesota Timberwolves of the defending champion Denver Nuggets in Game 2. They're now up 2-0. They won two games at altitude in Denver, surprising a lot of people. What was your biggest takeaway from watching that Game 2 performance?
I hate to say this, but that Charlie was right. It was my biggest takeaway. So last, Monday, we did a show, and Charlie was ready to not bury, but he was like, I think the Wolves are going to, like, really handle this series. And I was like, I did all the about champions in their medal, and Jokic is so great, and they've been tested, and blah, 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 blah. They got smacked, and they are not prepared, and we can blame the Jamal Murray injury, but also, don't throw I'm a former player union leader. I'm defending players. I don't call for nobody to be suspended, but Jamal Murray, how dare you throw some on the floor? Like, that to me was what I was like, oh, this is over. He gave up.
First quarter of game 2. That was early.
Yeah. I mean, look, to watch the Nuggets of the past two seasons before this series is to watch basically a metronome on offense. Like, these guys routinely push out 120 plus offensive ratings, no matter the opponent, no matter the situation. They are just machine-like in churning out efficient offense, right? And then they run up against this buzzsaw, and it just doesn't look like that. Like, game one, they struggled on offense. I think Minnesota played, slightly above their head on offense themselves, but it was just a regular game. The Nuggets were way below their standards on offense, and I think it starts at the point of attack with Jamal Murray, where the guy in game one is shooting 3 of 19 or 3 of 18. Or whatever it is, and in game two, it looked even worse. Like, this guy's getting pull-up jump shots blocked. Just straight up, his jump shots are getting blocked. When have we ever seen that happen to Jamal Murray? And I think the Nuggets, they wanted to try to keep running their stuff. They wanted to try to keep getting system buckets, if you will. And the Timberwolves were just not having it. Yeah. They were just shutting off their water at every turn. And I think they're at a point now, the Nuggets are, where they need their MVP to just go out and do that. Yeah. He just has to go out and beat people. It's not going to be about a system. He has to go out and try to score 50 against his matchup. And I think that's the only thing that can save them at this point.
I got a couple things. So the Murray thing, I think a lot of people are going to point to the injury, which I already brought up as part of the issue. Yeah, that's part of the issue.
He's clearly hurt.
Yeah, that's part of it.
Yeah.
But them boys playing defense, man. Yes. And I got to say that I appreciate how active and long, and we haven't even gotten to the defense that they're playing against Jokic and the big guys. Like, the perimeter guys are shockingly, like, suffocating on the defensive side of the ball. And I think that's something that it's also tied into how we appreciate or we are acknowledging that even though the NBA won't acknowledge it, they changed the way that they call in these games. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. the way that the Wolves were playing defense was something the first half of the season was not allowed. And the way that they played defense in this game is the way that they've been calling it the second half of the season and a lot in the playoffs. And it's to their big advantage. Like, they're a big,
yes,
long, physical team. And I think they are Jamal Murray or not. Like, Jamal Murray healthy or not. That's the thing that I'm concerned about, that I'm guarding against, is us saying that this is because Jamal Murray is hurt.
Yeah.
It maybe it's ugly because he's hurt, but the Wolves just seem better.
I might be prisoner a moment, because this is my takeaway as well from game two, was the Timberwolves defense. Like, I cannot remember since the, and I'm going to start this era of the NBA in 2015.
Oh, hyperbole alert. Get ready. I can feel them building up for some hyperbole.
There have been a ton of great NBA defensive teams. I'm not going to put them above and contextualize that the game was very different at different points. But since that Warriors team sort of emerged in the 2014-2015 season and won their first title, to me, with the way the game's being officiated now, I cannot remember a better defensive performance than what I saw in game two by the Minnesota Timberwolves. The perimeter defense was stifling. Jamal Murray didn't want to dribble the ball up past half court. They didn't have a secondary or tertiary ball handler that could take pressure off of Murray unless you're running the offense through Jokic handling the ball, which is not what they want to do. They want him as a top of the key passer and distributor and getting closer and closer to the basket. To me, this is a crazy comparison. We've heard so many Anthony Edwards, Jordan comparisons. The defense looked like a 90s Bulls type of defense team with Pippen, Jordan, Harper, just hounding people. And like, you're bringing in guys, obviously you have McDaniels,
right,
and you have Edwards, bringing in Nikhil Alexander Walker. It's just length and athleticism and stifling. They played so hard. And then you got Towns. Thinking that Towns was going to be a physical presence, like bullying people on offense and defense, was stunning.
I get caught up. I think I get surprised. Not every offseason, or excuse me, not in every postseason, but there are certain postseasons where you don't know what the difference is going to be or the story of that postseason is going to be. What's important? What's the difference maker? And oftentimes I fall back on, like, I'll go through all whatever analysis and thinking that I have, but eventually I'm like, who got the dude? And I think that was partially how I came into this series. I was like, who got the dude? But it feels like this series and a lot of this playoffs, if you look at the teams that are having success, is a lot more about depth than it is about a star. Does that make any sense to you, Wozni?
Yeah, I think Denver's depth was always going to be an issue. I think everybody who was paying attention rightfully pointed to, you know, losing Bruce Brown, losing Uncle Jeff Green. Those guys were key contributors to the bench units in the playoffs last year. And they were like, look, we're going to roll the dice on our young guys who are on rookie deals and, you know, count on our development, count on our collective talent to lift those guys up in, you know, their vulnerable times. But yeah, you guys are right. The secondary ball handling is tough. Reggie Jackson has tried his best. God bless him. And I think he's had spurts in a moment, but even he went off with an injury at the end of game two. And I just think they just got this thing so well scouted. Like, one of the things that they've done quite effectively was that they didn't want to let Jokic run fast breaks, right? I don't know if these guys saw something in the film, if they got some internal numbers about, you know, Denver's offensive efficiency when Jokic grabs and goes, but they're the first team I've ever seen be like, yo, as soon as Jokic grabs that rebound, we're getting the ball out of his hands immediately. Most teams are just content because they see the big fat white guy dribbling the ball down court and it's fine. They were the first team that I've ever seen in the history of this iteration of Denver be like, no, we're stopping that. And Jamal Murray, the way that they're pressuring him, literally out to freaking as soon as he inbounds the ball. And when Jokic comes up the screen, the way that they're crowding this guy, the way that they have the pocket pass, that's one of his favorite trick plays, is they come off the pick and roll. As soon as he sees a little bit of space for Jokic, he tries to throw that pocket pass in between two defenders. They're literally playing the play to not allow that pocket pass. And he's not at the point where he feels confidence in hitting that floater game, getting that, you know, putting up that quick pull-up two. Like, the Murray of past, you know, is a little bit more confident hunting his shot for whatever reason. These first two games, that hasn't been the mold that he's wanted to take. And Minnesota's like, yeah, you playing into our hands because we're not going to let Jokic dictate terms to us. And, you know, it's just been tough.
We should celebrate Anthony Edwards in all of the Warriors and everything that they're doing.
All the Wolves.
I said the Warriors. Yeah. My bad. Well, they're playing like the Warriors. Left, they actually aren't playing like the Warriors at all. Like, the ball doesn't move that much. That's a fair criticism of them, too, to the next round that we're going to have to see. Is their offense is not, I don't know, it's not pretty. it's working right now, but it's not pretty. But I guess you can win with defense. But the point I was going to make was maybe because we think this series is over, that we should spend a little bit more time on the Nuggets and on Jokic specifically, but you kind of sent us there off the top, Wozni, and saying, like, this is where he has a chance. And I don't want to be a Jokic hater. I don't consider myself a Jokic hater. But last series, all the, like, Jokic greatest of all time things were happening, and I brought up, like, he don't have that resume. Like, I see what y'all see, too. Yes, he can play at that level. I agree. Mm-hmm. However, he don't have that resume to have him in these conversations. And now we're at a moment where he kind of needs this to continue to be in those conversations or to justify people putting him there in the first place. Am I overreacting? But that's how I feel, especially since last year's run was not a challenging run. Like, I don't have a key thing to think about for Jokic. You think about all the other big men that we think of these greatest all times, they put up championships on top of championships on top of championships. And I know we can explain away why Jokic didn't get him. It's injuries, it's the bubble, it's all this other stuff. But Jokic, like, I know he don't care whether he's in these conversations or not, but anybody who's going to honestly put him in these conversations.
And the resume right now is a 4-year playoff run, averaging above 30, 13 rebounds, 8 assists, 1 championship, presumably 3 MVPs. And you're now assuming this is done. The Nuggets run is at an end if they get swept out of the series.
Does that sound wrong to you? That the Nuggets...
It sounds a little bit wrong to me. Right. I think they're a little bit diminished version of themselves. Again, like I said, they did take a step back in overall talent this season. And, you know, to your point, I think Jokic has to be heard from before the series is over, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he has to put his stamp on this thing in some way, shape, or form. Whether they go down, you know, in 4 or 5 games, whatever, that you know, sometimes that's how the chips fall. Mm-hmm. But Jokic has to put his imprint on this thing because we've come to expect that kind of output from him. Even a Joel Embiid, who so often comes up in these conversations, you can say what you want about them ultimately losing to the Knicks in the first round. He made his presence felt in that series, like it or not, you know. But like the minutes that he was on that court, again, the Knicks are obviously not as talented a team as the Timberwolves, but what I'm saying still holds true. Embiid made his impact on that series, even though they went down. You can't say Embiid was not a forceful, you know, positive force for what Philadelphia wanted to do. And I think Jokic has to take that approach. And honestly, I think one-on-one, I don't think he has a problem with Rudy or Karl Towns, to be honest. In the recent past, like, he's kind of cooked those guys in his one-on-one matchups with them. I just think he has to take that mantle of, like, yo, it's literally all or nothing. It's all on me going forward.
One, I think, obviously, Jokic deserves some heat if they get swept. Like, this is the crown you wear when you're the best player in the world. And two, this is something that your boss, Bill Simmons, brought up on his podcast. So that was an excellent point, that this actually happens to great players more than we realize. To pretty much everyone but Bill Russell, they have a moment in the playoffs where they sort of get pantsed. It happened to LeBron. Mm-hmm. It happened to Kobe. It happened to, you know, countless guys. Pretty much it happened to MJ. Everyone except for Bill Russell, who was playing in a very different era. The thing that I think is more interesting is how the Nuggets as a total unit haven't responded to adversity well at all. And that's the thing where if you want to take a look back at 2022, like, maybe this team wasn't as tough and as, like, resilient as we thought because they played all of these easy series. Personally, I don't love that because I think it does take a little bit of steam out of Ant. Like, the whole one of the fun parts of this is that Anthony Edwards is emerging as this guy, and doing it to Jokic and doing it to Kevin Durant and doing it to these guys. So if we disregard their greatness, then it's also disregarding what Edwards is doing.
Well, I mean, I think it's a fair conversation to have, and I try my best to position this as not a hater or disregarding. It's obviously more just my personal bias is pointing out that I was right a couple weeks ago when I said slow it down. However,
Jack got 12 six times. Six times. Sorry, Shaq.
However, I will say that we are assuming that it's over because we watched these two games.
Yeah.
Jokic got a shot, man. Like, this is like one of those things where I will be a damn fool. No one thinks it's going to happen. But if Jokic just put up 50 for three in a row and just goes on the road, wins a couple there, and starts putting, like, that's, it's not outside the realm of possibility. He is that good a player, that impactful, and the Wolves are newer to this environment. They haven't been pushed yet, so we could see, like, all the things that we question about teams like this is they haven't been pushed because they haven't gone there, and they're young. I know they aren't, like, young, but they're young as far as, like, this type of pressure. Like, there's a chance. There's some hope out there. No one believes me.
I mean, to me...
it's over. All right, yeah, you gotta waste time. You gotta sugarcoat it?
No. I don't want to say that. I just think, sure, It's the Wolves. We've never seen them do it. I don't think we should just take it for granted that they're just going to start smoking these guys, you know, forevermore here. I think that the Nuggets are going to respond. I think they have it in them to play much better than they have. They might ultimately fall short, but in no way do I think that they're at the point now where they just can't win.
Right.
Right? Like, they just can't beat the Minnesota Timberwolves. I think that's nuts. I think Minnesota, you know, God bless them, they are absolutely peaking at the perfect time. I'm sure you guys have seen the stat. They are the number one offense in the NBA playoffs. These guys finish either 13th or 15th, depending on what source you want to go to, in offensive rating this year. That is absolutely insane. Again, what they're doing on defense is what they did all year. I know people made a bunch of jokes about Rudy not being there in game two and them still having a smothering defense. That's one game. I think Rudy has kind of proven that he's that guy. He's redeemed himself and his reputation in that way. But yeah, man, I'm excited to see how the Nuggets respond, because I actually do believe in that heart of a champion stuff, championship medal stuff that you know briefly mentioned, Dominique. Mm-hmm. And I think that the Nuggets, you know, because they have some personal and professional pride, they're going to show some of that.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different stressors. I do, you do, we all do, big, small. And when we keep them bottled up, as I sometimes have had happen in the past, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/DF today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/DF.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Barnstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Waz, I do want to know what you think about the Wolves, which is, one, how important and impressive this Edwards breakout is, and two, if they keep rolling like this, do you view this Wolves team as a clear title favorite?
Two things. One, the Anthony Edwards thing is important because I remember a game against Boston very early on in this season that I flagged for myself, because after the game, my man John Krasinski at The Athletic, the most tapped in Wolves rider that there is. He was asking Ant questions about the ending of the game, and there were like three or four possessions where him and Jaden McDaniels ended up on an island guarding Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown in isolation, and that's what Ant Edwards wanted to talk about. He wanted to say, we held up against these two superstars in isolation, in crunch time, and that's the type of team we are, basically. And I remember, like, cataloging that because oftentimes when young guys become the kind of people that can drop 30 a game, 25 mm-hmm. a game, they start being like, yo, look, I'm a guy that drops 30. The gritty grind work, that's for the others. Yeah. That's for the help. I'm a superstar. I'm a star. I don't participate in that type of grunt work. Anthony Edwards, after beating everybody's title favorite coming into the season, and they're showing, and he had a good game on offense too. Right. He wanted to highlight what him and Jaden McDaniels did in the pressure pack moments on defense. And I was like, wow, this is an amazing development. Fast forward to the end of game two, what is Ant Edwards doing? He's going out of his way to flag Jaden McDaniels again. He's like, yo, this guy probably had 5 points, five shots between the two games, does no complaining, and is indispensable to what we're doing on defense. And so this guy at this age to be taking that tact about the approach and then understanding, having the emotional intelligence to be like, yo, it's not easy coming down court every possession, having no plays ran for you, not really always getting to participate in the fun stuff on offense, and still working your butt off on defense and staying committed that way. And the guy with the spotlight on him wants to highlight that. I'm like, damn, this is special, man. This is special, special stuff.
Yeah, I got chills while you were saying all that, in part because players like this don't come along often.
So refreshing.
And we use the same words to describe him that we would use to describe other guys, and it becomes quite clear that we shouldn't have been using those words because we've devalued them to some point. And I think the juxtaposition between Anthony Edwards and Karl-Anthony Towns is interesting because it's about authenticity. It's like Karl-Anthony Towns was the guy who said all the things that he was supposed to say. He knew what the superstar playbook, the team leader playbook said to do. And he did it. And he said it. But that wasn't real. And Anthony Edwards, we see it and it's real. And there's something about all the things and the emotional intelligence and basketball maturity that he has is we know in part guys hit their prime 26, 27 years old. That's because they haven't left their physical prime yet, but they have reached their mental prime. And the mental prime, part of that is understanding how important defense is, understanding how important all these ancillary things are that normally guys don't care about because they don't show up on a stat sheet, understanding how important the example you set and the things that you say because you're the leader and they carry more work, understanding that you're essentially the quarterback and also kind of the coach and a little bit the GM, and also like you can control the media narrative around it. It feels like either he understands how to do all of that or understands he needs to do all that, or he just naturally, like, this is real. And I know that everybody to some degree, athlete or not, all of us are like somewhat, there's a percentage of our personality that is performance. It feels like none of this is fake. And that's the part that like feels refreshing and exciting.
It's super refreshing. I mean, it's also, this is like a really gritty player in a league that had been one of the criticisms, but it felt like a finesse league in past years. And, you know, the personality helps, but it also is the fact that he's just so damn good. Right. Like, so like he's putting up all the performances that match the personality. And I think it's interesting.
But I think those are connected. Sorry, Charlie, to cut you off, Charlie, but I think that those are connected. I think that these moments, I think we talked about this last week and how when the tight moments show up, Anthony Edwards seems excited about it. Definitely. Not even ready for it, but like happy almost. And it's unusual. Sorry.
No, I mean, it's really interesting because you said that, you know, he's doing this at 22. And I think that's one of the interesting parts about it. They lined up and built this roster with Ant before his like gigantic salary is going to kick in. It's going to be a lot harder. And that's a credit to Tim Connelly, who made the all-in trade that got mocked for Rudy Gobert. That's him building this roster around Ant that really works and is so defensively dynamic. But the interesting part about this is we've talked about the Nuggets, and there was a point last year we thought this could be a 3-5 year run. They stack a lot of championships. If the Nuggets lose this round, and the Wolves become the title favorites, he'll be the sixth new champion in 6 years. Mm-hmm. And that's an era of parity that we haven't seen in the NBA since before the 80s. And I wonder, are we seeing something that's going to be like the birth of something, or are we in a different era where it's like the West is so strong that these teams are going to be fighting for the top every single year?
I think this is what Adam Silver ultimately wanted. Mm-hmm. This is what they've been dying for. This idea of like the NFL playoffs, you never know who's ultimately going to come out on top, right? Like this idea of the P word, of parity. It's what they've wanted. It's why they've added the freaking draconian luxury tax rules and second apron rules that they did, so that teams, you know, the teams at the very top cannot just keep stacking and stacking upon their already elite talent. So this isn't by accident. This is actually by design. And it's what the league's been sort of angling this thing towards for a very long time now. So I'm not surprised by that outcome. And to get back to that second question that you did ask me, you know, shameless plug on my YouTube show, In My Feelings. Check that out on the Ringer NBA's YouTube page every single Friday. I mentioned that I thought this series was for the championship. I said that on Friday. I literally thought the winner of Nuggets and Wolves would ultimately go on to the NBA Finals and win it no matter who came out of the East. And I haven't been dissuaded from that thought. I mean, Boston, it's not their fault that they've played some poor competition, but they've dominated that competition. But I think in terms of strength of schedule and quality of win, you have to say the Minnesota Timberwolves have been the playoffs' best team. If this were college football or basketball and we had a media poll and a coaches poll, everybody would unanimously agree that the Minnesota Timberwolves are at the top of that poll in terms of who's the best team in America and Canada, I guess. I think that's indisputable right now.
I mean, it's hard to argue with, but I mean, you got to show my Thunder some respect. But
your Thunder,
sure. Yeah, I'm taking them from Charlie. Charlie loves the Thunder, but I've decided they're mine because we got a Terp on that team, no Vanderbilt players on that team, so you can't have them. That's how I'm
stuck with Luke Kornet and the Celtics. Yeah. Real obvious. You're sticking me with the Celtics.
All right. On that note, we let my man Wozni go. Appreciate you for joining us, man. Good luck to your Knicks.
Peace, bros.
Up next, more headlines with Kevin Clark.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
All right, we're now joined by Kevin Clark, a famed Orlando Magic fan, football nerd, and 80s movie villain. Welcome, buddy.
I just want to say that we were offlining here about the mustache, and all of your mustache comparisons were in the last 5 years. You got to go further back, man. This is, I'm trying to do like a vintage thing here.
Oh, what do you want?
Like old Westerns? I don't know.
I mean,
you think you're Burt Reynolds?
Yeah, that's.
Smokey and the Bandit.
I don't know.
How about that? All your comps are Twitter people.
Why do y'all? I mean, I feel like you got a bit of a. Never mind, a beautiful mustache. Welcome to the show, buddy. I love it. I'm happy to have you. I don't want you in a bad mood before we do all these great headlines, but yeah, did great
you,
mustache.
You look like you could be the mood. Manager of a Dutch soccer team.
Is that? That's a compliment.
It is,
I would
of
love
course.
That.
They're all compliments.
How you feeling about the Magic? How you feeling about Paolo Banchero?
I'll make it quick. They need a shooter. They may need two shooters.
Should we talk about some real basketball teams?
Sure.
We're coming off of a drubbing last night where the Thunder just had waves and waves of talent.
Yeah.
And the Mavericks looked injured. They looked like a two-man show. They looked completely undermanned. And I'm just going to low-hanging fruit ask the question. After one game, does it feel like the Thunder are just better than the Mavericks?
Yes.
Yes.
Simply put, yeah. I mean, especially
You were right. That was low-hanging fruit. Yeah.
Especially with the way that Luka looked. Like, Luka looks out of it. Like,
yeah.
Physically and emotionally. Or I guess emotionally because of physically. So, yeah, they don't particularly have a chance. It sucks, too, because, God, Kyrie Irving is so fun to watch and so talented. Like, through the course of that game, there are a number of incredible dunks and highlights and blocks that were mind-blowing. But I still walk away from almost every game with Kyrie in it, even if he's not even playing well. I walk away thinking, gosh, that man, just the ball handling and the body control and the shooting ability is just a combination that is so, so fun to watch.
I don't know where the Mavericks go from here. I think there's a reckoning because there's a lot of torch passing. Is that a phrase I can use?
Yeah,
a lot of torch passing in both conferences.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know who's on the outside looking in. Like when the ground starts to shift beneath everybody's feet, like there are really good teams that get relegated to minor characters very, very, very quickly. I feel that way with the Nuggets right now, where they're actually seeing a market correction in real time, where they're just like, oh, this winning championship thing might not be for us anymore. Like we might be getting we might be getting supplanted in real time, and everybody can see it every single game we play. So I just don't know. I like the Thunder are the future. The Timberwolves are the future. Like we're starting to see that kind of generation move in before our eyes. And I think that the Mavericks, like, I don't think Jason Kidd's a very good coach. I thought their defense.
He wears glasses, though.
He wears glasses.
Yeah, he got glasses on now,
point.
So he can look like a better coach.
No, that's a good point. I withdraw my point. He wears glasses.
You're a big Dagnall guy? You think he's X and O-ing him up?
Definitely. He's an awesome coach.
No, I mean, you look like a big Dagnall guy.
The only thing I know about him is that LeBron and J.J. Redick had like a conversation where they're both like, he's on his P's and Q's. And I don't know anything about NBA coaching. So yeah. I go based off of who still wears suits. And then I just look at results.
I just
look at wins and losses.
This series is interesting for some of the things that you were saying, like the passing of the torch thing makes this series particularly interesting because I do see between both of these teams, like similar athletes around stars, but the difference it feels like that, and this does speak to coaching, Dagnall has faith in the athletes around these stars to handle the ball and make decisions and shoot. It doesn't feel that way. So, like, you watch these great athletes on the Mavs get great blocks, great defense, catch alley-oops, but you don't watch them handle the ball and make decisions or shoot a shot that was not created for them by Kyrie or Luka. And in watching the Thunder, my Thunder, play. I'm a big Thunder guy. I've been high on the Thunder.
Huge.
All playoffs. I told Charlie coming in that to the playoffs that keep an eye on the Thunder. I know they're one seed, but nobody believes until they're young. They're going to be great.
That's good. That's a good tip. Thanks, Fox.
You got it. But watching them, like in the fourth quarter, be comfortable with Jalen Williams running pick and roll fourth quarter of a playoff game and like Wiggins making decisions and handling the ball. It's like no other teams seem that comfortable with these ancillary guys in these key positions. So we'll see what happens when they get in a tough series because they haven't been in one yet. But right now it's really impressive.
May I ask a question? This might seem hyperbole and then you're going to think about it and it's going to seem less like hyperbole.
Okay.
In basketball history, has there been a better rebuild, reload situation than what Sam Presti's doing right now? Like from where they were with, and I'm talking about they're on very close to the mountaintop as far as Westbrook, Durant, Harden, they hit the reset button and they're this good this quickly. Like I'm trying to think in any sport of a team that was like, we're just going to tear this down to the studs and we're going to be a juggernaut very, very, very quickly. Like it's a Mount Rushmore.
We can skip the shock and hyperbole. I think you're right. Like it's hard to argue against that, how good they are and how well positioned they are going forward, which we always hear about their draft picks. And it's probably an interesting way to go with this conversation. It's like, what should they do with their draft picks? I'm someone who's like, hey, the windows open, ball all them draft picks up and throw them at a star and get and go to the next level. But I can see by the look on Charlie's face that he disagrees with me.
No, I think I have a stat for you. I'm going to stat you guys
stat
down.
Me down.
Oh, baby. Oh, baby.
The Thunder won 57 games with a 7.4, a plus 7.4 point differential.
Damn.
The 2012 Thunder, the KD, Russ, Harden Thunder, 6.1 point differential. What they've done with SGA, Chet, and Jalen Williams and these draft picks is unbelievable. And there's something that we've talked a lot about a little bit, which is Sam Presti in certain ways running this like a football team. Like they have just waves of players and waves of options, and they have indispensable pieces and then dispensable pieces on the edges. And we're going to see the NBA move into this new era where it's harder and harder to retain your whole roster around stars. Right. And we thought for years Presti was going to just cash in these draft picks, get another all-star, build around that, have elite guys. They're so good at drafting and developing, and they hired Chip England from the Spurs, who fixed Kawhi's jump shot, who's really helped this team. They shot 16 for 34 from three in game one. That's obviously not sustainable.
Oh, no, that's all Chip.
That's Chip, big Chip.
If they're going to continue to draft the Cason Wallaces and the Jalen Williamses and the Jalen Williamses and guys outside of the top five that are excellent, and they have all of these draft picks, you can keep Chet, you can keep Jalen Williams, you can keep SGA, and keep rolling in guys on rookie contracts that can be excellent players by the time you have to pay them.
The interesting thing about this question, about this team, is they have shown the ability to continuously draft well while no one else shows that ability consistently, which even prior to Chip in England would suggest to me that it's not that they're drafting well objectively as much as they're drafting well for their team, and they are good at developing players. Because I think that this is, again, and this is part of the reason why we had you on here, is because you're a football guy like me, and I think basketball guys don't see it this way traditionally. They see, like, all right, a guy is drafted, either he turns into something or he doesn't, and it's a complete referendum on them. Whereas us in football, we appreciate that the culture matters, the system matters, because football is a lot more complex. All these things matter to the development of a super talented player. And I think that the fact that they've done this over and over and over again suggests to me that it's not about picking the best players, but it's picking players for them and developing them in the system. Like, they have a clear theory and understanding for what they want to do, and they stick to it, and it works. And the last thing, I know I'm rambling, the last thing I'll put out there is, I know we all think of Oklahoma City as a major disadvantage as far as recruiting free agents, but I think that oftentimes with restraint or any sort of constraint, is it like it opens up a different way of thinking. So they go into a world where they're like, you know what? We have max salaries, so we can't even overpay to get a star. We are never going to get anyone to come to Oklahoma City. Let's figure out a different way to do it. And the result of that is they've come up with a better way. And like, you see that in a bunch of different industries throughout history, is that the constraints are what leads to the best innovations.
I was going to say, I'd be interested to see the data, because in football, the data is that there are no super drafters. Like, there's not, if you look at the player value, it just doesn't exist. Ozzie Newsome's the best to ever do it, but even he had cold streaks. The Ted Thompson Packers, John Schneider.
Disrespect,
I'm curious, Fox, like, being on the inside, player development to me, especially in college with young players, is weight room. It's just code for weight room. And then there's the scheme stuff. Then there's, in basketball, I'm sure that there's, you know, don't take bad shots, teaching them efficiency, all that stuff. But I'm curious, Fox, having been on the inside, like, I know it's a massive question. It could mean anything to anybody. But, like, what is player development to you? Like, what, when you get into a football program and you can say, oh, this place is different because they teach you what? Like, what does that even mean?
Yeah, I think it's about customization. And it's, so player development starts with the selection. And this is a very famous, like, thing associated with Bill Belichick in football, is like, I focus on what the players do well.
Can do.
Yeah. So you find the thing that they do well, and it makes sure it's something that's important to the system that you're running. If it's not, change your system. And then from that point on, I think it's about focusing on the areas that need improvement and the areas that can be improved. And it's mostly in these games, you didn't mention, I mean, I guess in an ancillary way, you kind of mentioned the mental part. That's the big part. That's the big part, is understanding what to look for. And while you're doing that, you don't want to lose the fundamentals. I know the best season I had in my probably football career was when I had Emmett Thomas as a dedicated cornerbacks coach. I never had, at any other level in my life, high school, college, any other pro team, we had a DB coach. We never had a dedicated cornerback coach. And I would spend every day with him when I was at the Falcons going over basic technique. And like you think most coaches, like, they know how to play football. No, we don't. We forget. We get loose on the technique. So I think all of that matters. And I think that's probably why where Chip Englund fits into this conversation, and that he's a dedicated shooting coach. What's the most important thing? What is everybody looking for? Shooting.
It's interesting. It's also like, yeah, it's organizational stability.
Man.
Because Presti's drafting guys who are long, who can handle, who can pass, and they're trying to get the shooting developed afterwards. And like, they've taken a bunch of bites at the apple. I mean, the SGA trade is going to go down as one of the best trades in NBA history for someone who's a top two MVP candidate and is still emerging. And they got that for Paul George, who's going to leave, along with now they have 15 draft picks before 2030.
Do you think SGA, this is a similar question online we were talking about. Do you think SGA would have been this version of himself if he stayed with the Clippers?
Probably not.
Yeah.
Being like a third option, Kawhi's in and out of the lineup. Teams more on the fringes.
It depends what kind of motivation he has. Like, like, would he have fit with big egos as a role player, biding his time, developing? Like, it just, you talked about customization. It's also customization for you know, my whole thing on quarterbacks is geography is destiny. Like, if you don't get to spread your wings, do you ever spread your wings? And I think that's the biggest thing is, like, if you're, it's possible that SGA would have said, I have to be the best role player in the history of the Clippers. And that's his destiny. And he's making, you know, $25 million for the rest of his career to be just an awesome third option. It's possible.
Talking about the Thunder and talking about circumstance, I feel like we have to at least mention James Harden as, like, the player who was on track to be a great six man and then went on to be like, I know we can talk about his, all his systems, but yeah, it went on to become a system all in itself. But anyway, Charlie, I cut you off mid question.
No, I just want
a lot for the ESPN2 audience.
I wanted to just put a button on this and be like, this thing that's really fun and interesting about this. The Thunder along with the Wolves have been the two healthiest teams all season. Both teams feel like they have infinite timelines where they can be good now. They can be good in the future because of young stars, but it's exciting because this team, even though they've played lackluster opponents in the first two rounds because of injury, they could win the title this year. And you never know if they're going to get another shot to be this good. And it's really interesting. All right, guys, final question. Have you seen this? Have you heard about this? Austin Rivers has sort of taken over the internet. His quote.
I can't wait. I'm sorry. I'm going to let you do the quote. I'm going to let Kevin respond to it. And then I'm going off because this pisses me off. Anyway, go ahead.
By the way, I'm impressed Charlie's in Jay Leno mode. Have you seen this? Have you heard about this? What was that setup?
Well, have you heard this quote?
Folks.
Austin Rivers, son of Glenn Doc Rivers, was on Pat McAfee. Ever heard of him, Kevin?
Yeah.
He said, I could take 30 players right now in the NBA and throw them in the NFL. You cannot take 30 NFL players and put them in the NBA. This made people big mad. It made J.J. Watt angry. He said, you don't have a job, Austin Rivers. Our friend of the program, Chris Long, was really mad. Gojo was really mad. Yep. Pissed off a lot of NFL guys. Dominique Foxworth, NFL player. Your thoughts?
Nope. It pissed off Dan Orlovsky also.
Oh, yeah.
I am enraged by this, but I want to hear what Kevin has to say because maybe he'll have some better reasoning than I do.
I think that I am on everybody that you just mentioned side. I do not think that Austin Rivers is in any way correct. I think that there are tea leaf readings that would give them more confidence. Here's what I mean. Like, did you guys see the video of Micah Parsons against a sumo wrestler last week?
Mm-hmm.
Did you guys see that? The sumo wrestler handles him pretty well. Yeah. And there were people who were saying, just openly questioning, like, why isn't there, you know, more consideration just having the biggest people possible? And the answer is, you would get them moving left to right, and it would be over. And Micah Parsons would murder that person. I guess you could play him the sumo wrestler at guard and just kind of scheme around him or whatever, but, like, it wouldn't actually work. But there are, you know, once in a blue moon, a couple of moves that someone could put on, use their athleticism or their size, that would help. But the physicality, the difference in athleticism, the difference in body mass and how it's constructed, like the toughness part of it. Like, I just don't think, I mean, we're getting into, like, there's always the thing about what if the best Americans played soccer? What if Allen Iverson played striker? Like, I promise you, it's a different skill set. It's offensive
to
say that
that's
all
enough.
These guys.
That's enough. That is quite enough. I would like to.
I was cooking.
But you was cooking the wrong meal because you're dead. wrong. I'm team Austin Rivers.
What the hell?
I hate it. I hate that I have to throw my brethren under the what is it, the train, the bus or something, whatever. But this stinks of people who ain't never actually been around basketball players. And I was like this at one point. I used to think like the best athletes world.
Joe Ingles is going to turn into Justin Jefferson.
Okay, yeah, you can pick Joe Ingles if you want. But the NBA is not made up of a bunch of Joe Ingles. The point is, it's going to be hard for either. But let's be honest about the level of athlete that's in football. There are like really great athletes. I think this is the analogy that I would make, especially with the modernization of basketball, in that you can't get away with being an enforcer or a rebounder or a defensive specialist. Everybody can handle the ball and shoot in a way that is rare. And they are also like 6'3 is short. Like, this is absurd. If you think that I could make a tackle tomorrow, give me any wing in the NFL, or excuse me, any wing in the NBA, bulk them up. You think that he can't kick slide? All the intricate like footwork that they do with the ball in their hand? I've played, and this might be coloring my perception. You remember Birdman, basketball player?
Yeah.
Chris Anderson? Yeah. I played when he was in Denver. He was suspended for something, so he came to like our local 24-hour fitness.
He was suspended a lot, so this does not narrow it down.
Yeah, he was suspended a lot. But anyway, the point is, he played with us. He showed up, and we had a bunch of football players, really great athletes, awesome high school basketball players. He was the best shooter and ball handler on the floor, and the Nuggets wouldn't even let him shoot. He was just out there. And I think this is the best way I can explain it, is there are a select number of skill positions in football where you are required to have a level of artistry that is rare. But football is made up of a lot of blue collar employees that are just explosive athletes. There's a lot of essential workers that aren't surgeons in the NFL. The NBA, they are all freaking surgeons. It is. I used to think this. I used to think that football players are the best athletes. If you think about just in sheer numbers, how many people in the world grow up playing football? American men. How many people in the world grow up playing basketball? A lot more. How many people get to the NBA? A much smaller number than the numbers that get to the NFL. It's just like by numbers. And what would you rather do? All of us football players found out that we were the third best basketball player in our high school, but the best football player, so we gave up basketball. We would have stuck with it and been Michael Jordan if we could have. And I'm just being honest with all of us. You know what? Name anybody in football that you think could play in the NBA. Myles Garrett, you better get ready to get your – I hope your visa and your passport is up to date. You can play basketball in China somewhere. Like, it's ridiculous, the level of athlete. And he only 6'5".
No one's arguing. Your counterfactual was that you once lost in pickup to Birdman Anderson. Like, that he's a professional basketball player. Like, of course he's going to. What I'm saying is, you can't cross-pollinate here. You can't
just
say –
So you're saying we can't have this conversation at all?
No, I'm saying that the NBA guys can't play in the NFL and the NFL guys can't play in the NBA.
See, that's where we disagree.
Zion can be Antonio Gates?
Yeah. I don't think Zion could be Antonio Gates. Zion would never play. He gets hurt just walking around the court. Now he's going to
injury slides are off in this analogy.
Either way, Zion could play in the NFL, but I guess maybe having been in the NFL, there are incredible athletes. But the difference is everybody in the NBA is an incredible athlete. Also, they're 6'5". And also, they have the hand-eye coordination. That's the point about surgeons versus construction workers that I was making before. It's like some guys in the NFL, like quarterbacks, have like unique level of hand-eye coordination and proprioception. Not everybody in the NFL does. Everybody in the NBA kind of does. And I hate to admit it. I want to say that our guys are better, but they ain't.
If I can drop a nugget. So I talked to a couple people for a story a couple years ago when Jimmy Graham had made the switch. So Jimmy Graham obviously went from University of Miami basketball to 1 year at Miami football, was okay, and then becomes a huge star. I actually just saw Jimmy Graham on McAfee earlier today. He's an adventurer of some sort.
Oh, yeah.
So
I know.
He's doing three things.
Endurance challenges and stuff to raise
money, right? Good for
Shout
Big
out Jim. Jimmy Graham.
But I was doing that, and I talked to Frank Haith, his coach, and he said that is a specific type of basketball player who can make the leap eventually with training. Remember, Jimmy Graham did play college, 1 year of college football. So that's there's some training there. But it was from Miami, so it barely counted in that era. He said quick feet, because yeah, I believe he was number one in the country.
I got an argument killer. I can't wait to get to it. Go ahead.
At drawn fouls. Drawn charges, excuse me. Number one in the country, and then like top five in blocks. And so he can move vertically. He can move with his feet. He can shuffle and all that stuff, right? And then as part of that, an old scout, Gil Brandt, told me that the Cowboys used to have a suite at the Final Four. This is in the 70s. They had a suite at the Final Four where they would literally – like host the, you know, if you've never been to the college Final Four, it's kind of a boozed fest for any coach who's not actively participating. It's a little bit like the combine in that regard. So they just bring in like these guys from Michigan State and be like, hey, you got any guys who are 6'8", might be good tackles. Yep. And that produced a couple of really, really good players.
Yeah.
But they stopped doing it because eventually it was diminishing returns. Yes, you can get some, but you don't have a limited training camp spots. You don't have time.
Can I take a quick time out?
Yes. I have a feeling it's going to be a long time out.
Quick time out. You just told that story. That is evidence to my point. How many NBA teams went to bowl games and hung around talking about, hey, got any guys that ain't going to make it to the NFL that we could slide over here to hoop with? None.
Yeah, because there's 90 guys in training camp. Back then, it was like 150 guys. Back then, you just signed up for a sheet. It was like beer league softball.
My point is that the NFL coaches recognize that the lower end of basketball talent could play in the NFL. No NBA coach ever looked at a football game and said, you know what? Some of them 5'9 dudes sure could work over here. Like, it's just nonsense. Anyway,
but it's
my quick
the
time
same. No, but it's the same. It's the same. Is that there's certain body types that work in both sports.
Okay.
And that's the prerequisite. Right, why you'd be doing it.
Are you done? So I can finally kill the argument? I hate that I'm on this side, but I got to be on the side of truth. Okay. All-time greatest athletes in the NFL, where would you rank Julius Peppers? Top 10, top 5, top 3?
I mean, top 25, certainly.
Okay. He was a mediocre college basketball player at UNC. That's it. Ronald Curry was a basketball player at UNC, mm-hmm. also in football mm-hmm. player. Man played in the NFL, couldn't play in the NBA. You got Charlie Ward. That's it. And you know what? To my other point, if any of us could have chosen basketball, we freaking would. Charlie Ward had a choice, and he was like, you know what? I'm good.
It's also
all right. No,
Charlie
let me
Ward,
ask you
a little racism at the time.
Yeah. Charlie Ward did have a little racism mixed in, which is also why the NBA is better.
Paolo Banchero goes through with it. Okay.
He's 6'10".
Let's just say it.
Bishby Ogden.
Yeah. Great. So he goes through it, plays quarterback.
No.
That's what he played.
I understand that. But my point is that's the one position where I do think that, or that's one of the few positions where I do think that there's a level of skill that not everyone has. But honestly, the traits that NBA players have would probably be better in. Those NBA traits would work to be a quarterback. But anyway, fine.
Anthony Black, great example. So Anthony Black, Bruce Feldman wrote a piece last draft basically saying that if he wanted to be recruited as a college player, he would have been a total stud. But Anthony Black went in the lottery. He would not have been a top 20, top 30 pick in the NFL. I think it's completely different skill sets. I'm not good at any sport,
I think you're right. There are different skill sets, but I think that it's more likely to find it. Like, if you think Paolo Banchero probably has to work to keep weight off. He's 6'10", and he has the footwork of a defensive back. No one would get around him if we could just teach him how to kick slide. He'd be the best tackle in NFL history, like offensive tackle. Or he'd be an incredible pass rusher. Like, the thing is, if you had, and I've played sports with other professional athletes, and then I'm like shocked because like, oh yeah, they make them like us, but just bigger. And that's the NBA guys are like us, but bigger. And maybe there's some toughness component. Okay, we can sort through. Maybe there are a couple basketball guys who can't take a hit. Sure. But there's a lot of them who are tough as and can take a hit.
Can I tell one story really quick that I always thought was really funny, which is this, that did you know that Tony Allen was ineligible to play high school sports, so he was a dominant tight end under a fake name playing high school football?
What?
Wow, I didn't know that.
End on a happy note by everyone agreeing that I'm right. I'm sorry, football guys, but you're all wrong. It's just the height. Like,
yeah. So NBA players can play in the NFL, not vice versa.
Yeah. The height alone, like, we 6'5 is like average for them. 6'5 is huge for us. Anyway, all fun and games. Thank you for joining us. Do I have to thank you and your mustache separately, or can I just get one blanket thank you?
The mustache will get back to you.
All right. Appreciate it, Kevin Clark. Thanks. Till next time, Charlie Kravitz. Bye, awesome guys. Job. I appreciate you. As usual, you're the man. Shout out to Podville. I love you. And all our great producers, Megan, Serafina, Kevin, and Brian. Cortez is a coward.
This is the Dominique Foxworth Show.